He wasn't having any success with his kahila. So he called long distance a fiery magid, someone who had the skills to arouse the olam, to get everyone into it, and to move and stir the kahila. Someone made out of fire. So this magid comes to the community, and the whole kahila comes to the shul, and the magid gets up and he lambasts the kahila. He tells everyone in the kahila, they're all going to go to Gehenna. And all the kahila starts to cry and sob uncontrollably. And there's one fellow smack in front of the magid who's smiling away. And it disturbs the magid. And the next night the magid gets up and he says, I want everyone in this kahila to know, if they don't improve, the entire kahila is going to suffer sorrows. And the whole community starts to cry again. And this one fellow in front of the magid sitting there smiling and smirking. And night after night, the magid gets up and he says with fire and brimstone, if the kahila doesn't change, they're going to suffer. If the kahila doesn't change, there's going to be problems forever. And night after night, the guy's smiling. So after a week of this, the magid goes over to the person and says, don't you hear what I'm saying? Don't you hear what I'm telling everyone in the kahila? What's with you? He smiles and he says, I'm not from this kahila. You're not from my kahila in Florida, and I'm not from your kahila. But I'll tell you something, Leil Tisha B'Av. We're all from the same kahila. The congregation of the Ribbono Shel Olam, Kol Yisrael Arevim Zeh B'Zeh. Everyone in Klal Yisrael is responsible for their fellow Jew. No exceptions. There's no this kahila and that kahila, and I'm not from the kahila. We're all from the same kahila. We all belong in the shul known as the Beis Elokeinu, the Beis Hamikdash, the third Beis Hamikdash. So we're all from the same kahila. Because truth be told, Klal Yisrael is one guf. Millions of Jews from all walks of life are one guf, one body. I'd like to add a new dimension to that concept of our being one guf. We know that if someone's sick and he needs a refuah shelema, we daven they shouldn't die from a dreaded disease. How does that work? If God says that that person's to die, who pray tell are we to daven for that person and change the mazel, change the luck of that person, that he shouldn't die? We, puny individuals, are going against HaKadosh Baruch Hu? God decided one will? Who are we to change that? So my father Zatzal explains as follows. When a person davens for someone else in the world, even if you don't know who the person is, al yidei tefillah, there's an ichud. That means through the medium of davening, you unite with that person. You become one guf. So if the dreaded disease was going to rack the body of Reuven, but now you, Shimon, unite through prayer with Reuven, he's no longer the same guf. He's not the same individual. He's now Reuven / Shimon. And the only one that the Ribbono Shel Olam said is to die is that guf, Reuven. But if you unite through tefillah, my father Zatzal explains, it's a new guf. It's a bria chadosh, a new creation. And on that new guf, the Ribbono Shel Olam never said there has to be tzar, there has to be sorrow. Only on what was, not the new creation. We say tonight, Leil Tisha B'Av, Klal Yisrael is one guf. There is clearly something wrong with the guf as it is. There is a gezeira ra'a, an evil decree on the guf of Klal Yisrael as it is. Terrible things are happening all around the world. We already spoke last night what's happening in Eretz Yisrael just yesterday near Emmanuel. How we have Yisroimim and Almanos, widows and orphans, 6 and 7 year old boys saying Kaddish, empty baby strollers. The only thing you find in a carriage outside of a pizzeria is a baby doll, no child. There's a gezeira ra'a on this guf. And it's clear that we have to change the guf. We have to have an ichud. Tonight, Johannesburg, Florida, New York, L.A., England, Eretz Yisrael, there has to be an ichud. Achdus, unity. And that's why the topic for tonight is feeling the connection. And when we feel the connection with each and every one of ourselves, then we'll feel the connection with the Ribono Shel Olam. And then we'll merit to create a new guf, a body on which there is no gezeirah ra, evil decree. Only good, only shalom, only nachas, only parnasa, and only returning to Eretz Yisrael in the ultimate of peace and harmony. That can change tonight on this Tisha B'Av. We've got to create a new guf. There's a fascinating Gemara in Yuma. The Gemara tells us the first Beis HaMikdash was destroyed because of the three cardinal sins: Gilui Arayos, Avodah Zarah, and Shfichas Damim, adultery, idolatry, and murdering of people. The second Beis HaMikdash was destroyed because of Sinas Chinam, baseless hatred. Then, astonishingly enough, 20 lines later, the Gemara says, after giving the reason for the destruction of both temples, the Gemara says as follows: since the reason that the first Beis HaMikdash was destroyed was revealed, the finite amount of time for the Golus, the exile, was also revealed, 70 years before, between Bayis Rishon and Bayis Sheni. But since Lo Nisgala Avonam, the tragedy that brought about the destruction of the second Beis HaMikdash, was never revealed, we'll never have it revealed to us a finite specific time when we will get out of this bitter Golus, almost 2,000 years long. So I ask you, ladies and gentlemen, is the Gemara not a plea astonishing? What do you mean that it wasn't revealed why the second Beis HaMikdash was destroyed, and therefore we do not know, it has not been revealed to us when the Golus will end? You told me why the Bayis Sheni was destroyed. Sinas Chinam, baseless hatred. So what, pray tell, does the Gemara mean, Leinizgala Avoinam, we don't know why it was destroyed? Sure we do. Could be the Gemara is telling us. Imagine a person is not well and he goes to the doctor. The doctor can pinpoint meticulously, this is your disease, this is the procedure you should follow, these are the antibiotics, the medication, the prognosis, and when you'll recover. And by the way, this is the part of the body that it's affecting, the upper part, the lower part, he knows it all. Imagine another guf, a person's not well, but he has not gone to the doctor. Even if he has, the doctor has not yet told him that what is wrong with him, how it is running rampant in his body, how it's ripping his guf asunder. He knows he's sick, but he doesn't know, is it affecting the liver, the kidneys, what organ, the hands, the eyes? I don't know. That's what the Gemara means. The Aveira was revealed. The disease, we know, it's Sinas Chinam. But we don't know what it does to our guf. We don't know how it rips families asunder. We don't know what it does to Shalom Bayis, to parents and children, to Chaverim, to Rabbonim, to their Tehillos, to people throughout the world. It rips us asunder. And that's what the Gemara means. The actual Aveira, we know, it's Sinas Chinam. We're clueless to how devastating and how destroying Sinas Chinam is. And until we learn Nisgala Avoinam, what the disease reveals in Klal Yisrael, it will never be revealed the case when the Golus, this exile, will end. So if tonight we can be Miyached, unite our guf to create a new guf, and say, Ribono Shel Olam, look how we're trying. We know the Aveira Sinas Chinam, the antithesis, the antibiotic. We've got to shoot up on Avas Yisrael, love of a fellow Jew. And when we learn the remedy of Avas Yisrael, God's going to come from Shemayim, and we may hear that bas kol, this Tisha B'Av, the heavenly voice that will say, now that it's Nisgala Avonam, you know the remedy for Sinas Chinam is Avas Yisrael? I'll tell you when the Golus will end. Come on to the Kanfei Nesharim, the wings of my ego, and let's go back to the Bayis Shlishi. I believe that the quintessential pasuk in the entire Tanakh that speaks about our Avas Yisrael, our unity, hands down, is a pasuk in Yisro. As Klal Yisroel was at the foot of Mount Sinai, it says millions of people, Vayichan Shom Yisroel, we camped there. Vayichan. Vayichan is singular. Millions of people. Vayachanu, plural. No, Vayichan. Millions in camp as if one. Why? The most famous Rashi, I believe, She'ish Echad, Belev Echad. We were one. We were Ish Echad, Lev Echad, united, and therefore it says the singular. Those who review the Parsha each and every week, it's perplexing. A week before in Parshas Bishalach, when it talks about the Egyptians chasing the Jews, it speaks about millions of Egyptians chasing us, and it says, Nosea, he traveled. Why the singular? They're millions. Rashi says, Lev Echad, Ish Echad. They were united. I'm devastated. The quintessential paradigm of our unity is also said on the Mitzrayim, the Egyptians. Vayichan by us singular, Ish Echad, Lev Echad. And Nosea by the Mitzrayim, Lev Echad, Ish Echad. Of what value is our unity if the Egyptians and Mitzrayim have the exact same? I was devastated. What does Rashi mean? I'll tell you what I think the pshat is. Notice that the order is flipped around. By the Jew it says, we're Ish Echad, Lev Echad. But by the Mitzrayim it says, Lev Echad, the heart, and then Ish Echad, the person. Do the Mitzrayim, the Egyptians, the Arabs, really have unity? I don't think so. The Arab nations hate each other. They kill each other if they could. But there's one thing they hate more than each other. And that's us. And for that they unite. So it's not a real unity. It's based on the emotion of wanting to kill the Jew. Lev Echad. But it's not a real, genuine achdus. But that's not the way the achdus of Klal Yisrael can be. We can't be based on emotion. Only someone who dresses like me, wears a yarmulke like me, sings like me, davens the same nusach as me, sends to the same school as me. That's not acceptable. That's not achdus. That's cloning. Achdus means Avas Yisrael. Getting along with each and every member of Klal Yisrael. We all serve the same Ribbono Shel Olam. Our unity has a shoresh, has a basis. And that's what Rashi means. Their unity is not real. Ours is genuine. Ish Echad. We're one body. We're one guf. And then the lev, then the neshama, unites ultimately. My father Zatzal always said over a parable about a fellow who is given the opportunity to take a trip on an escalator both upstairs and downstairs. To see Gan Eden upstairs and Nebuch to see Gehenim downstairs. The fellow's intrigued. He first goes downstairs, right? The bad first. You have good news and bad news. I want the bad news first. So he goes downstairs and there he's given a tour and he sees that the tables are set. I shouldn't be talking about food the night of Tisha, but forgive me. The tables are set magnificently. Delicious, sumptuous meals, seven course, Viennese tables, anything your heart desires. But the people in Gehenim all had, he noticed, very, very thin, scrawny. No one had eaten in days, but the food was there. So why, pray tell, didn't they eat? Because the fellow noticed that there were large, long iron rods running from the top of the shoulder to the fingertips. And on both hands, thus you cannot bend your elbows and bring the food into your mouth. And although they were staring at the sumptuous meal, because of the iron rods, they could not bend their hands to feed themselves. That's Gehenim. He then goes upstairs to Gan Eden, and he sees the same sumptuous tables, beautiful food, and there the food apparently is getting eaten, because everyone in Gan Eden looks sumptuous. full, like they just had a delicious meal and they're about to eat again. But he didn't understand, because there too they had the iron rods running from the top of their shoulder to their fingertips, both on right hand and left hand. So if you can't bend to bring the food into your own mouth, how, pray tell, did they successfully eat and get the nutrition they so desired? And then he watched, because each person picked up the food. And although the iron rod did not allow them to bend their own hand, they were able to pick up the food and feed their friend. And every individual picked up that food and helped out the other Jew, and fed the other Jew, and cared about the other Jew. In Gehenna, they don't know from such things. Thus make Gan Eden. What is Gan Eden all about? Caring about someone else. Even with the restrictions of an iron rod. And today we have restrictions. We have sorrows. We have difficulties. But we can still help our fellow Jew. That's the ultimate definition of Gan Eden. With your hand tied behind your back, with the difficulties, help. Be there. Just 2 weeks ago I saw a pshat that is scintillating. It's brought down in the Sefer Shaarei Tshuva. In the name of Reb Hai Goin. Reb Hai Goin is discussing the laws of sukkah. Teshu Kein Taduru. You must dwell in your sukkah exactly as you do in your permanent home. You eat in your home, eat in the sukkah. Drink in the home, drink in the sukkah. You sleep in your home, sleep in the sukkah. Ask Reb Hai Goin, what if two best friends only have room in the sukkah for one person? Who's it going to be? And I don't mean if it's the cold weather like now. In your December, and in my beautiful month, whatever that may be in Miami, in that type of weather, what are two best friends going to do? So if Hai Goin says, they should alternate nights. Night number 1, 3, 5, and 7 of Sukkos, let friend number 1 sleep inside. Nights number 2, 4, and 6, alternate, and the other friend should sleep in the sukkah. Brilliant, yes? Concludes Reb Hai Goin, and I quote, "Im chaviva aleihem ha-mitzvah." If it is so chaviv, so dear and precious to them, the mitzvah, ha-mitzvah, which mitzvah? Dwelling in a sukkah as one would in the home, then I have a better suggestion. Each one should sleep, he says, mitzas halayla, part of the night. 2 hours friend one, the next 2 hours rotate friend two. 2 hours the first friend, and 2 hours. And during the night, alternate the friendship. The friendship should still stay intact. Alternate in the sukkah. I think Reb Hai Goin is saying something else. When he says, "Im chaviva aleihem ha-mitzvah," if the mitzvah is so precious to them. I noticed that the word mitzvah had that famous hey ayidia, the ultimate hey beforehand. If ha-mitzvah, if the quintessential mitzvah of the Torah is dear to them, what, ladies and gentlemen, is the ultimate mitzvah? V'ahavta l'reacha kamocha. Love your neighbor as you love thyself. If ha-mitzvah, if that ultimate mitzvah is so dear to the two friends, not they should switch off during the night. They will switch off during the night. Memeila, how could it be if our chaverim are in a house? One's in a sukkah. Do you think he's going to sleep fitfully? Do you think he'll get a wink of sleep knowing his best friend is inside? And then they'll switch and the friend will come out. The friend's going to enjoy the nap in the sukkah knowing his friend isn't where he wants to be. That's what he means. Im chaviva aleihem ha-mitzvah. If the ultimate mitzvah, v'ahavta l'reacha kamocha, is so precious to them, not they should switch off. They will. Because that's what the iron rods do. They feed and take care of the other person. And that's why they'll switch during the night. Because they feel compelled to. You know that just like there is ha-mitzvah, the ultimate mitzvah, I'm sorry to tell you there is ha-aveira. There's really only one aveira in the world. Don't take my word for it. Reb Chaim Volozhiner, as Afusa Yovan Aleinu says, in Pirkei Avos we say, harchek min ha-aveira. Distance yourself from the aveira. There's only one aveira. There are hundreds. Reb Chaim Volozhiner says there's one aveira that's the root of the other hundreds. It's the disease. Ha'aveira, the quintessential aveira, it's lashon hara. It's gossip. Because like the Gemara in Erechim tells us, why is the Metzora who speaks lashon hara sent to the outside of the camp? Let him be isolated. Let him dwell himself. Let him be separated. You know why? Because you who speak lashon hara, we say to the leper, you created separation. You broke up the marriage between husband and wife. Siblings no longer speak to each other. Families can't stand each other. You split up and created dissension amongst people. Mida keneged mida, measure for measure. Sit by yourself because you must be separated. I think that the tikkun, the way to rectify ha'aveira, is with ha'mitzvah. The way to fix lashon hara with the pirud, the dissension and separation, is by an infiltration and inculcating avas Yisrael, the ahavta l'reacha kamocha. Ha'mitzvah will ultimately take care of ha'aveira. Interesting to note, I've mentioned in the few days I've been here, are we capable of this? Look at all the foods that our grandparents loved to make. The foods and the delicacies they enjoyed. You know what they made our grandparents? Knedlach, kreplach, kremslach, rugelach, teglach, lach. Everything for you. What can I do for you, lach? I want to help you. What do we eat today? Bisli, pre-li, nestli, li. What's in it for me? That's got to change. It cannot be a li society. That's the guf that has the gezeira ra'a. It has to be Allah. What can I do for you? Even with the iron rod, even with only having one bed in the sukkah, I care about you. I can't exist without you. I'm not complete without you. There is a pasuk in Devarim, Perek Bey's pasuk Lamed Dalet. One word I want to tell you. The pasuk says, Misim. Misim is spelled Mem Tuf Yud Mem. Under the Mem, by the way, is a Shva. Two dots, one on top of the other. Rashi says, you know what the definition of the word Misim is? Rashi says one word. Anoshim. People. Misim means people, live, healthy human beings. I thought to myself, how do we say a person who's dead? Mesim. The same letters. Virtually the same nekudos, the same vowels. With one minor exception. Mesim, live people, has a shva, two dots, one on top of the other. Mesim, a dead person, or dead people, has a tsere under the mem, two dots side by side. That's the only difference between live and dead people, what's under the mem. A dot on top of each other, or next to each other. You know what I think the pshat is? When people are alive, they're always trying to go on top of the other, to up the other one, to be better than the other person, to throw the other off the ladder. How can I up you one and do better than you? How can I spite you? That's what we do when we're alive. It's misim with the shva, one on top of the other. But at the end of the day, mesim, they're side by side. At the cemetery, there's just no difference. That's the only difference between misim and mesim. In this world, we try to do better and get on top of another person by harming them. But mesim, at the end of the day, we're all in the same boat. About 2 months ago, in the shul that we have in North Miami Beach, we're redoing our base medrash. Two of our mispalalim took it upon themselves to clear out the old svarim that haven't been used in years. Put all the svarim in boxes, loaded up the boxes and carried the Svarim out of the Beis Medrash through the hall and into the waiting car. Of course, Svarim get buried in what's known as Shemos. You bury these holy articles. They're loading box after box of the Svarim, and two other Balabatim walk over to the first two and say, "What are you doing?" "Well, we're taking the Svarim and burying them because they have to be put in Shemos. We have to go now." So the two Balabatim who looked in the box incredulously, No, wait. This set of Svarim you cannot touch. It is sensational. The Pshatim are phenomenal, one after the other. And this single Sefer, it speaks about the land of Israel. Please don't remove it. And one after the other, you can't take this, you can't take that. You can't bury this, you can't bury that. Two Balabatim loading the boxes looked at the other two and said, "Do you realize how foolish you sound? When these Svarim were on the shelves for 18 years, you never touched them, you never looked at them, you didn't glance at them, you didn't even pick them up. They collected dust and mold. And now that they're going in boxes to be buried, now all of a sudden they're so precious, now you can't do without them? Where were you then?" When he told me this story, I really started to cry. Are we much different? There are people in our community. There are people throughout the world we don't glance at. We don't care about. We don't do much with them. We don't give them a second thought or anything. But the minute they get carried out in boxes, and the minute it's time for their Shemus, "Oh, they're so special, I should have tried harder, I should have been there more," we have to start appreciating now. Maybe then we could redefine Misim. Don't look at the two dots as one trying to outdo the other, but rather one person using the other for support. One building based on the other. One needing the other, and I need you and you need me to go higher up the steps and ladder of serving the Ribono Shel Olam. But it all begins with Avas Yisrael and appreciation now. I want to take this idea of Avas Yisrael one step further. It may not be so pleasant to listen to, but I feel it's imperative that we say it to each other. When we linked about an hour ago the first chapter of Eicha, linked so beautifully, the third pasuk says, and I quote, "Golsa Yehuda me'oini." Yehuda, we went into exile, and it's a bitter exile. And then the pasuk says three words, "Lo matza manoach." We never found manoach. What does manoach mean? Menucha, rest. And until today, lo matza manoach, we have never found manoach, rest. I heard from the Jibo Dayan, Shlita of Montreal. He said a pshat that's oisig veinlach. Let's go to a different part in history where Rus comes home and tells Naomi, her mother-in-law, "Ma, I have great news for you. I'm engaged." She says to Rus, "Mazel tov. We'll make a l'chaim, a vart. Who's the chosen?" Rus says his name is Boaz. Naomi turns white. "You're engaged to Boaz? Yeah, why? Don't you know about Boaz?" And first she uses the expression, she says, "Really, I want only good for you. Halo avakesh loch manoach. I only seek manoach, rest, tranquility, and goodness for you. Halo avakesh loch manoach. That's all I desire." But then hearing Rus was engaged to Boaz, she says, "You can't marry him." So Rus says, "Ma, why not?" So Naomi says, "Let me tell you something about Boaz that took place years earlier. There's a Gemara in Baba Basra, extremely sad. Daf Tzadik Aleph Amud Aleph, where the Gemara says, years earlier, Boaz, when he was a younger person, he had 60 children, 30 sons and 30 daughters. And for all of the children, all 60, he made two chasanas. Could you imagine today making 120 weddings? The florist would have a field day. The video fellow, the camera, the caterer, they'd love you. Boaz made 120 chasanas. The Gemara says to all 120, there was one person in his community he never invited. And the name of that person was actually Manoah. There was a man named Manoah that Boaz never invited. I'm going to tell you why Boaz never invited Manoah. You may say to me, is that really the pshat in the Gemara? I've confirmed it with the Jibba Dayan actually half a dozen times. According to Rashi, this is what the Gemara means. Boaz says, I'm not inviting Manoah. I'm making 120 weddings. Manoah doesn't have any children. I should invite him to my weddings when he'll never be able to reciprocate? He's going to get a free meal out of the deal. I, says Boaz, I'm just absolutely not inviting him to my chasana, my wedding. How's he going to be able to repay me and invite me back to his chasana? Others may learn he meant it out of the goodness not to harm Manoah. But that's not what the Jibo Dayan says is the Poshet Pshat. He meant, I don't want him to have a free meal, and he never invited Manoah. The Gemara concludes by saying, after the weddings, as a result of his not inviting Manoah, all 60 of Boaz's children, 30 sons and 30 daughters, died in his lifetime. Subsequently, Manoah went on to have a child, Shimshon HaGibor. Boaz lost all 60 children. So now let's return to the story. Naomi says you can't marry Boaz. Look at his bad luck. So Ruth says, all right, I'm getting out of the deal. Let's not make the L'chaim. Then Naomi says, but Ruth, there's one thing you can do to turn it around. There's one thing you can do when you marry Boaz that will change the mazel. Ma, what's that? You know what you can do? Invite Manoah to your wedding. Invite him. Don't turn away again. But if you now invite the Manoahs of the world, those who can't reciprocate, your union, your marriage, Ruth and Boaz, will be a thing of beauty. And indeed, on that guest list at the chasana, on top of the list, was Manoah. And look what came from Ruth and Boaz. David ben Yishai, Mashiach Tzidkenu. I think that's the pasuk we read a little while ago in Eicha. Gosa Yehuda Na'oini. We're in Golos and we're wandering. Loi Matza, let's say it together. Manoah. Not we haven't found rest. Do you know why we're in Golos? Do you know why we're in exile? Because Loi Matza Manoah. We have not found the Manoahs of the world. We have not found the Manoahs, those less fortunate. And the whole while that lay matzah manayach, we don't care about the less fortunate. We don't care about those who aren't as privileged as we are. It will remain. Golsa Yehuda me'oini will remain in Golos. But when we find the manayachs, when we invite them to our bar mitzvahs, our bas mitzvahs, our chasanas, our Shabbos table, our yontif meals, the Golos will end. If we invite the manayachs, we will be matzah manayach and found the ultimate menucha. I'll tell you a maisa that happened about 30 years ago with the previous Satmar Rebbe, Zechusa Yogan Aleinu, Zecher Tzadik V'Kadosh Levracha, Rebbe Yoel. There was one of his Talmidim in New York. I happen to know the fellow. Years ago, Nebuch, he lost his wife. But he wanted to remarry. He was read a shidduch, this was in New York, he was read a shidduch across America from L.A., an almana with 6 yisaimim, a widow with 6 orphans. He says to the Satmar Rebbe, I don't know anything about the family. Should I do the shidduch? Should I marry her? The Satmar Rebbe tells this person in New York, don't worry. I have a chassid. I have a disciple in L.A. I'll call the chassid and I'll find out about the woman, the children. I'll inquire. And I'll get back to you. I'll give you a whole report. And I'll tell you, yes or no, marry her or not. Talmud Rebbe says, I'll get back to you tomorrow. L.A. is 3 hours earlier than New York. He waits till it's the morning. He calls up the chassid. Oh, the Rebbe, the Satmar Rebbe. Rebbe, what can I do for you? One of my people here in New York was read a shidduch to someone from L.A. and Almana with six yisaimim. Tell me all about her. And he starts asking questions. What's she like? Where does she send her children? How is she doing? The stability in the family? How have they handled their previous loss of her husband? On and on. He writes down dutifully all the questions and he says, Rebbe, I don't know the answers to any of your questions, but I'll call you back. I'll make some calls right now and I'll find out and I'll let you know. And then he hears the Satmar Rebbe crying. And all the Satmar Rebbe can say is, you're not my chassid. You can't be my chassid. And to say that to a chassid from the Grand Rebbe, that's like a dagger in the heart. He says, Rebbe, what did I do? Tell me. The Satmar Rebbe says, how can an Almana at 60 Yisraelim live in your community and you don't know about them? If you can't tell me about them on the spot, you can't be my chassid. V'tendazayim. How can an Almana, widow, and six orphans live in our communities? The Yisraelim, the Almanas, those who don't have a place to eat on Shabbos. And we don't know about them. We don't seek them out. In order to be a chassid of the Ribbono Shel Olam, we've got to look for the manayachs. There are no excuses. It's too difficult today to give excuses. Avraham Avinu is the ultimate paragon of chesed, kindness. You want to know about Avas Yisrael? Look to our first father, Avraham Avinu. You know that Avraham created and established the tefillah of Shacharis, the morning prayer. I once heard a beautiful pshat. Avraham is the father of chesed, the ultimate in Avas Yisrael. He created Shacharis. He established Shacharis. How do you spell Shacharis? Shin Ches Resh Yud Tov. The night of the Haggadah, there are four sons and they're all to come to the table. The Chacham, the Rasha, the Tom, the Sheina Yodei Lishol. The wise, the wicked, the simple, and the one who doesn't know how to ask. Nebuchadnezzar Yisrael, there are all of those. You know what Avraham taught us? Take the first and fourth letter of Shacharis, the Shin and the Yud. You know what it stands for? She'eno Yodea. Take the second letter of Shacharis, the Ches. You know what it stands for? Chacham. The third letter of Shacharis, Resh, stands for Russia. And the last letter of Shacharis, the Tuf, stands for Tum. Avraham Titein Shacharis. Avraham established in the world Shacharis that all four Bonin must be reckoned with. The Sheinu Yodea, the Chacham, the Rosh, the Tum. In fact, his tent was open from four sides. Why? Because each child needs to enter a different path. The way you speak to the Chacham is not the way you talk to the Tum. The way you handle the Tum is not the way you'll affect the Rosh. The way you deal with the Rosh will have no meaning to the Sheinu Yodea. Chanoch l'nar al pi darko. Everyone has to be handled as an individual. And thus he had four openings to his tent. Avraham is the paragon of Shacharis. The Arba Bonim, they must be reckoned with. And that is what the Ribbono Shel Olam wants from us, this Tisha B'Av. And just how powerful is our taking care of Manoach? What's the reward for taking care of the Yesomim and Yesomos, the orphan boys and girls? How does Hashem reward us? I'll tell you very briefly a pshat from the Be'er Yosef, a classic sefer. He talks about Klal Yisrael leaving Egypt. Now when we left Egypt, we left without any mitzvos whatsoever. In fact, God in His chesed had to give us two mitzvos just to replenish our stock. The Be'er Yosef quotes two. Targum Yonasan ben Uziel, Targum Yerushalmi. We'll do it outside to save time. The Be'er Yosef says that when the Jews left Mitzrayim, they went out, be'uvda tuva salika. They went out with baskets and baskets of good deeds. They what? You just told me they had no mitzvos. How could you tell me they went out with millions of mitzvos? Which is it? Make up your mind. And then there's the famous word that they went out, chamushim. Chamushim literally means with weapons of war. The Bar Yosef says it means something else. Chamushim is from the word chamisha. They each went out with five children. What? It was a society where every parent had exactly five children, two cars, three pets. Everybody had the same? Oh, I don't believe that. Says the Bar Yosef. You know what it means they went out with five children? During the plague of Choshech darkness, 4/5 of Klal Yisrael died in darkness so no one would see. That means out of every five sets of parents, 4 died. And only 1 out of 5 children, or I should say families of children, had parents. 4 families became orphaned. Could a family who was still alive and leaving Mitzrayim with their own children leave behind the orphan children? Out of every 5 families, 4 didn't have parents. You could leave Mitzrayim and leave them behind? It's not possible. So every parent who was able to be alive and had children, Hotyahat Rachmonis, had mercy on the other 4 sets of children who didn't have parents. And thus, that's what the Bar Yosef says. When it says we went out chamushim with 5 children, it means with 5 sets of children. Ours and the 4 that did not have parents because they died in Choshech. That chesed is the ultimate. And that answers our first question. When they left, they were bare. They had no mitzvos. But the minute they showed chesed to the Yisomim, to the Manoachs of the world, the Uvda Tuva Salika. They went out with buckets and buckets of mitzvos. And that's why I dare say they went out of Mitzrayim. Because of their kindness to the Manoachs of the world. It behooves us to find them and to take care of them. The Bar Yosef ends by saying, you know the famous song, Lech Teich Acharai Bamidbar Zacharti Lo Chesed Nurayeth. Before it was a song, it was a pasuk in Navi. It doesn't work the other way around. The singer didn't first create the song and then Navi thought it was a cute idea. First it's in Navi and then the singer did it. Literally it means, Hashem says, Zacharti Lech Teich Acharai Bamidbar, you followed me into the desert? Zacharti Lo Chesed Nurayeth. I'll remember the chesed nu'rayeh that you did in your youth. You know what the Bar Yosef says it means? Zacharti la chesed nu'rayeh. Not the kindness you did in your youth. The kindness you did with the youth. With the kinder. With the manayachs of the world. You followed me blindly. I will never forget Chesed Nu'rayeh, the Chesed you did with the youth. Because when you do with kindness with the Arba Bonim, you are sure to be redeemed. And just as surely as we left the Golos Mitzrayim, we will leave this bitter Golos. The Ribbono Shel Olam should remember Chesed Nu'rayeh, the Avas Yisrael, specifically to those who need it most. All people want is a kind word. I want to read to you something someone gave me 5 years ago. I don't know the author. I always say whenever I read it, it could have been written by Shlomo HaMelech and put as a new perek in Koheles. It's called The Dream. I dreamed I had an interview with God. Come in, God said. You would like to interview me? If you have the time, I said. God smiled and said, my time is eternity and is enough to do everything. What questions do you have in mind to ask me? He asked God, what surprises you most about mankind? God answered, that they get bored of being children and are in a rush to grow up and then long to be children again. That they lose their health to make money and then lose their money to restore their health. That by thinking anxiously about the future, they forget the present, such that they live neither for the present nor the future. That they live as if they will never die, and they die as if they've never lived. God's hand took mine, and we were silent for a while, and then I asked, as a parent, what are some of life's lessons you want your children to learn? God replied with a warm smile, to learn that they cannot make anyone love them, what they can do is to let themselves be loved. To learn that what is most valuable is not what they have in their lives, least. To learn that it only takes a few seconds to open profound wounds in persons we love, and that it takes many years to heal them. To learn to forgive by practicing forgiveness. To learn that there are persons that love them dearly, but simply do not know how to express or show their feelings. To learn that money can buy everything but happiness. To learn that two people can look at the same thing and see it totally different. To learn that a true friend is someone who knows everything about them and likes them anyway. To learn that it is not always enough that they be forgiven by others, but that they have to forgive themselves. I sat there for a while enjoying the moment. I thanked him for his time and for all he's done for me and my family, and he replied, anytime. I'm here 24 hours a day. All you have to do is ask for me, and I'll answer. People will forget what you've said. People will forget what you've done. People will rarely forget how you've made them feel. This Shabbat, we have to realize how to make people feel. The only way to get rid of the Chorban, the destruction, and the Sinas Chinam is with HaMitzvah, Ahavas Yisrael. Look to make people feel good. Call them, visit them, smile, be genuinely concerned. That's the only way to get out of this Golos. Years ago lived a classic Hasidic Rebbe. His name was the Apter Rebbe. While the Apter Rebbe was known for many things, perhaps he was best known for his phenomenal Ahavas Yisrael, love of a fellow Jew. The Ahavas Yisrael had one thing that he was known for week in, week out. Whatever the Parsha was of Parshas HaShavua, he threaded the entire theme with Ahavas Yisrael. Parshas Noach, he always spoke about Ahavas Yisrael. Vayelech, only Ahavas Yisrael. Tzav, oh, I can't imagine in my shul, if 52 weeks a year, I tried to speak on the same topic. It wouldn't last a month. Every week, Friday night in, Tish out, the same Ahavas Yisrael, Pinchas Ahavas Yisrael, Shemois Ahavas Yisrael, B'shalach Ahavas Yisrael. Please open your hearts. It's Friday night, Parshas Balak. And the Hasidim turned to the Rebbe and said, Rebbe, Balak, what are you going to pull out of your hat now? Or strimal, whatever it was. What are you going to do? Balak, that Russia, the rishus, the wickedness, Bilam. The Apter Rebbe says, Balak is easy. Balak, I can do a theme of Ahavas Yisrael like this. Go for it. The Apter Rebbe says, Balak is spelled Vez Lamed Kuf. And that stands for V'ahavta L'reacha Kamocha. You know I haven't been drinking. It's Tisha B'Av. So I'll get to the punchline. He said, Rebbe, Balak is a Vez and V'ahavta is a Vav. Balak has a kuf and Kamaycha is a chaf. What are you saying? So he says, my entire Hasidim, don't you get it? When it comes to Ahavas Yisrael, you can't be so medakdek. You just can't be so particular. That's what we have to learn tonight. Let's conclude with one Dvar Torah, one story, and then a bracha. There's a terrific medrash brought down in the Sefer Yalkut HaDrush. It says at the end of Sefer Bereishis that Yosef, the viceroy of Egypt, buried three treasures of money in the ground. The Gemara tells us in Psochem, Kuf Yud Tesamet Aleph, that those three monetary treasures were found. The first by Korach, the second was revealed by Antoninus of Rome, Rabbi Yehuda Hanasi's good friend, and actually the third treasure is still buried. It has yet to be revealed. Three pots of gold. Korach found the first, Antoninus the second, and the third has yet to be found. But the Gemara implies when the third will be found, the Beis HaMikdash will be rebuilt. Says the Sefer Yalkut HaDrush, Yosef did not only bury three treasures, he buried three legacies, three treasures of values, of idea and ideals. The first was found by Korach, the second by Antoninus of Rome, and the third wasn't found yet. So what is the legacy, those treasures that Yosef buried? Treasure number one, we say every morning in Shachris, Rabos machashavos b'leiv ish v'atas Hashem hisokum. Many people can rise up and try to destroy us. Only the word of God will ultimately prevail. Look how Yosef proved that. The brothers wanted to kill him. The story with the wife of Potiphar being thrown in jail, interpretations of the dream, one after the other tried to sidetrack and derail him. But you know what ended up happening? He helped save Klal Yisroel. That legacy was buried, and you know who found it? Korach. Inadvertently, mind you, and in the negative sense, but he did. He thought he was God's gift to the world. He can be the leader. He can usurp Moshe Rabbeinu and Aaron. It's his show. Atzas Hashem Hisakum. Korach learned from the first legacy that he uncovered, God runs the world. The second treasure was buried. You know what that was? That even though Yosef lived in Mitzrayim in a Gentile world, he still had the respect of the other nations. He still made a Kiddush Hashem sanctify God's name wherever he went. The Mitzrayim respected him. They looked up to him. He made a walking, talking, breathing Kiddush Hashem wherever he went. He buried that treasure of getting along with the Gentile world. You know who found it? Antoninus of Rome. Antoninus and Rabbi Yehuda drastically disagreed and fought philosophically in ideology, theology. They never agreed. But Antoninus of Rome found that legacy of respect, and there was a tremendous respect for Rabbi Yehuda Anossi. And then, Moirai v'Rabbeisai, he buried the third treasure. And that third treasure was that although his brothers tried to destroy him, and although they wanted to kill him, at the end of the day, it was forgive and forget. He had such a love for them. Chazal say that once he revealed himself to his brothers, he never kissed his father Yaakov privately in a room by themselves, because he was always afraid that Yaakov may ask Yosef, so tell me, what really happened? Or is there anything I can do for you? Or maybe Yaakov would word it differently and say, how can I help? And Yosef may feel compelled to say what really happened. He never wanted that to happen, so he never kissed Yaakov in a room by himself. He forgave his brothers. He wasn't so medaktik like the Opter Rebbe said. He forgave and he loved all of Klal Yisroel. My life and Rabbeisai, he buried that treasure. He buried that legacy, and the Gemara in Pesachim says, we have yet to find it. But there is a promise. When we do uncover that treasure, when we do learn the lesson of forgiving, not being so particular, and the ultimate of Avas Yisrael, when we find that third treasure, and it may very well be this Tishu B'Av, and the Gemara promises, now that you have the third treasure, I'll give you back the third Beis Elokeinu, the everlasting Beis HaMikdash. Please, look for the treasure. Find it in everything we do. Because together, may Arba Kanfos Ha'aretz, from the four corners of the world, we can find the treasure. I've only been in Johannesburg a few days. I'm blown away by the sincerity, the genuineness, the kindness, the compassion of individuals. People who take me home. In fact, I had an interesting story. Somebody took me home. I didn't know if he knew where to take me, so I said to him, do you know where I'm going? He said, philosophically speaking? I loved that answer. I told him I would say it tonight. He says to me, if you don't know where you're going, how should I know where you're going? I know where I'm going in Johannesburg. to a Makom of Ahavas Yisrael. I do believe that the Beis HaMikdash is right around the corner. And this Tehillah Kedosha, or Sameach, Shmiras HaLashon, and all the phenomenal organizations will lead the rest of Klal Yisrael and show us Avram, Yitzchak, Yaakov, Sarah, Rivka, Rachel, and Leah. I can't believe in one community there can be so many genuine individuals. How could there be so many hundreds of kind, caring, compassionate people? You taught me Ahavas Yisrael. You taught me how to find that third treasure. And I am deeply grateful to you for having begun to uncover and discover that third treasure. Johannesburg is a community like no other. I'll tell you a story that happened about 5 years ago. There's a dynasty right outside of Muncie, New York. It's called Skver, the Skver Hasidim. They're led by the great Skver Rebbe, you should live and be well. Tens of thousands of Hasidim. It was Erev Rosh Hashanah 5 years ago. What do you do Erev Rosh Hashanah? You go, if you're a Chassid, to your Rebbe for a bracha. Hundreds of Hasidim were lining the Skver Rebbe's home, his courtyard, in the living room, the dining room, all waiting to get a bracha from the Rebbe. You know how it is. You go, you wait online, you give him a kvittel, a little piece of paper with a prayer for someone or something. He takes your hand, he gives it a kiss, you give him a kiss, and you go on. Hundreds and hundreds and hundreds of people on Erev Rosh Hashanah. Every one of the Skver Hasidim, as is their tradition, are dressed in black. The hat, the jacket, the coat, the shoes, everything is black. There's one person who clearly sticks out. He's dressed very differently. He's wearing khaki-colored pants, Dockers, a colored shirt, a different type of yarmulke. Now please, don't misconstrue this story. He has every right to be by the Skver Rebbe. Everyone does. But the Hasidim were wondering, Erev Rosh Hashanah is such a busy day. Surely you're not a chassid of the Skver Rebbe. What possibly could have compelled and propelled you to come here? You're more than welcome to come. But what would you be doing here on such a busy day? Standing behind this person dressed a bit differently was Lazer Schwartz. Lazer Schwartz said, when he and I finish by the Rebbe, I'll ask him. They wait their turn an hour and a half, 2 hours. Finally, it's this fellow's turn, the one in front of Lazer Schwartz. He bends over to the Skver Rebbe and says, Rebbe, please daven refuah shleima, and I'm giving you the real name now, for your Achmiel Chanina ben Cyril. He needs a refuah shleima. Lazer Schwartz's eyes popped out. He also had a son named Yerachmiel Chanina ben Cyril. What an amazing coincidence that they're both having a child not well, each with the same name and mother's name, Yerachmiel Chanina ben Cyril. He was just astonished. So when he finished, he ran after the fellow and said, excuse me, sir, was that your son you were davening for? And he says, no, actually it was for someone else, a boy named Schwartz. He says, that's my son. Who are you? And why were you davening for my son? He says, you're Mr. Schwartz, Shalom Aleichem. I'm a counselor in the summer in a camp known by the acronym HASC, Hebrew Academy for Special Children, children with all forms of disabilities. Your son, Yerachmiel Chanina Schwartz, was in my bunk, that nine-year-old. Do you know how much I love your son? But yet he had so many physical disabilities, mental handicaps, it killed me. But oh, Mr. Schwartz, no one could light up the night like the glow of your son's eyes. I love him. And as the summer came to an end, I knew that Rosh Hashanah was approaching, and that was his birthday. So I decided I was going to buy your son a present and send it in the mail. You know I live 6 hours from here. I went to a bookstore to buy him a book, and then I said, no, maybe I shouldn't buy the book. They're from the Hasidim of Skver, maybe a book that's appropriate for me won't necessarily be accepted in their family. So I went and I bought him a game. And I said, no, not a game either. Because maybe the game isn't something the family will allow to be played. They're Skver Hasidim. I don't know. I don't want to do anything that they might be disappointed with. So I didn't know what to get him. And then I decided, he's not well. There's a Skver Rebbe. I'm going to travel on Erev Rosh Hashanah to New York. I'll come to the Rebbe. I'll ask a refuah shleima bracha for your son. And that's why I'm here. That's my birthday present for your son. I want to wish him a refuah shleima, and I want to wish you a ksicha v'chasima toiva. That's Ahavas Yisrael. have to feel that way. Think about someone else. Think about the Rachmiel Chanina ben Cyrils of the world. And when we do, we'll merit the Geula Shalema, the ultimate redemption. I close with a bracha. Please open your hearts. There's a well-known mitzvah of Shiluach HaKan. You send away the mother bird from the nest before you take the children so as not to cause the mother any pain or harm. She shouldn't see the anguish of the kids being taken away. It's called send away the mother bird. I'll read you the exact pasuk, please listen. Shaleach tishalach es ha'em, send the mother bird, ha'em, ve'es habonim tikach lach, and then take the children. I'll tell you what the pasuk might be saying. Every time we've gone from Golus to Geula, from an exile to a freedom, it has been through primarily two people, the initials of which begin Aleph and Mem. We left Mitzrayim by means of Aharon and Moshe, Aleph and Mem. We left the story of Purim by means of Esther and Mordechai, Aleph and Mem. And ultimately, we'll reunite in Yerushalayim through Aleph and Mem, Eliyahu and Mashiach. Those two letters together spell aim. Shaleach tishalach es ha'aim. Please send the final aim of Eliyahu and Mashiach. End this galus. V'es habonim tikach lach, and take your children, Klal Yisrael, on the wings of an eagle. Reunite us in Eretz Yisrael together. It should be the will of the Ribbono Shel Olam that tonight Tisha B'Av turns into a moyed, a holiday. We'll all return like children with the Ribbono Shel Olam. We'll dance by the Kotel, the Chutzos Yerushalayim, in the courtyards of Jerusalem, with the rebuilding of the third base Hamigdash, b'mheira v'yameinu, amen.
Thank you, Rabbi Shapiro. We're going to continue now with our learning program for men and women. Rabbi Auerbach will be giving a shir. Please bear with me so everyone can hear the allocation of the shirim. Rabbi Auerbach will be giving a shir in the right-hand side of the base Hamidrash, dealing with the Gomorrahs of the destruction of the base Hamikdash. Rabbi Arbiter on the left of the Beit HaMikdash will be giving a shir on understanding the concepts behind Tisha B'Av. Rabbi Eliezer Auerbach will be giving a Hebrew shir to the Hebrew speakers at the back of the Beit HaMidrash. Rabbi Goldstaff in the back left corner will be giving a shir on Megillas Eicha. In the back right corner I will be going over Halochas dealing with Avelus. Rabbi Furman will be giving a shir to the ladies in the back section of the shul. Please, once again, can I ask everyone to help bring all the kinois and eicha sheets for the men's section to the bima, put them please in the correct boxes, and for the ladies' section on the ledge. Once again, the video of the Chofetz Chaim Heritage Foundation tomorrow for women will be at 2 p.m. at the Snoyman residence on Mejan Street, and for men at 3 p.m. in the small shul here at Osamer, featuring Rabbi Kessin and Rabbi Pesach Krohn.
Thank you.